Okay, I want to share with you a beautiful Torah that I read from Rav Aaron Lapiansky, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in Silver Spring, and one of the great thinkers of today's generation. So that's what I love about teaching in Sharpens. It starts off with honking in Yerushalayim, you know, like it's, right, the noise challenges here. Okay, so the Pasuk says, Vayomer Moshe al Aaron, Krav el Mizbeach. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Aaron, draw close to the Mizbeach. Approach the Mizbeach, bring your carbon chatas, bring your carbon ola, right? Atone for yourself and for the people, and perform the people's sacrifice, which will atone for them as Hashem commanded you. Okay? Listen what Rashi says. Rashi says, Krav el Mizbeach. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu telling Aaron, draw close to the Mizbeach? So Rashi says, Shehaya Aaron Bosh V'yarei Lageshas. Aaron HaKohen was Bosh, like Busha, like embarrassed. V'yarei Lageshas. And he was afraid to approach the Mizbeach. Therefore, Amar lo Moshe, Lama ata Bosh? Lekach nevcharta. Why are you embarrassed? This is what you've been chosen for. So there's a lot of questions that have to be unpacked on this, but Aaron HaKohen is afraid to approach the Mizbeach. Why? What's he bringing the Karban Chatas for? Anybody know? For the sin of? There was a specific Aveira that Aaron HaKohen has to bring a Karban Chatas for. He has to bring a Karban Chatas for the Egel Azov, for the Egel Azov that he was participating in. Because Aaron HaKohen is the one that built the Egel, so Aaron HaKohen has to atone for that. All of Klal Yisrael also needs to atone, but Aaron HaKohen needs to atone for himself, and he seems to be like afraid on some level. He's embarrassed. I should be the one to do it. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Krav el HaMizbeach. Don't be afraid. Lekach nevcharta. This is what you've been chosen for. There's a very obvious question here. Well, there's two obvious questions. Number one, it seems a little interesting to us that Aaron HaKohen would be afraid to bring a carbon chatas. Like, probably if we were thinking about what Aaron HaKohen was like, if he did something wrong and he has the opportunity to bring a carbon chatas, he's probably the type of person that runs to say, I'm sorry, that runs to bring a carbon chatas. Okay. Aside from the fact that it's a little strange that Aaron HaKohen is a little afraid, there's something else that really, really bothers me about this Rashi. I'm sure it bothers you too. There's an old skit that was done on something called Mad TV. Mad TV was like a Saturday Night Live ripoff many, many years ago. And the skit is that a client walks into a therapist's office and the client says, I have a fear of being buried alive. So the therapist says, okay, we can deal with that. And then he says, my pay structure is, it's $5 for 5 minutes and it's $1 for every additional minute. And she's like, wow, that's amazing. I've never heard of this like pay structure before. He's like, yes, I'm just going to tell you this, and it's going to answer all your questions. She's like, do I need a pen to write it down? He's like, no, you don't need a pen. I'm pretty sure you can remember it. And so she's like, okay, I'm ready. He's like, you ready? He's like, I'm ready. He goes, stop it. And she's like, what? He's like, just stop it. Don't be afraid of being buried alive. Just stop it. She's like, well, I can't stop it. He's like, well, no. That's not how this works. Is it working for you to be afraid of being buried alive? She goes, no. He goes, just stop it. So if somebody says, imagine you're afraid, right? Imagine you're afraid and somebody goes, don't be afraid. Does that work? No, it doesn't work. So what's Moshe Rabbeinu doing here? Aaron HaKohen is afraid to draw close to the Mizbeach because something about the Chet HaEgel, we have to understand what it is. But something about the Chet HaEgel, Aaron HaKohen is a little afraid to draw close to the Mizbeach. So Moshe Rabbeinu goes, no, don't be afraid. This is what you were chosen for. Like, yeah, but I am afraid. You can't tell someone who's afraid, don't be afraid. And yet, that seems to be exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing over here. So what's pshat in this Rashi? Krav el HaMizbeach, yeah, draw close to the Mizbeach, don't be afraid. Is it that simple? By the way, if it is, how awesome would that be? It'd be amazing, right? If you were suffering from something terribly and you just needed some inspirational Rebbe to come over to you and go, Don't be afraid. Oh, okay, great. I don't need to be afraid anymore. That would be the best therapy in the world. Just, it would be like the ultimate therapist. Just like whisper these words in your ear, and all of a sudden you're a changed person. So it's an obvious question. I think we can all agree to this question. Okay. So listen to what Rav Lapiansky's answer is, because it's brilliant. And I saw it this morning, you should know. And I said, okay, I had a different shir prepared, but I was like, this is the shir I want to give, because I really fell in love with this idea. On what day was the Mishkan inaugurated? Anyone know? I'll give you a hint. It's the name of the parsha. Okay, I'll give you a different hint. It's this week's parsha is Parsha Shmini. Yeah. Okay, very good. So it was the eighth day. Okay. So the question is, how do we look at the number eight? It was the eighth day. There were 8 days of the inauguration of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was inaugurated on the eighth day. The question is, how do we look at the number eight? So there's a difference between the way we look at the number seven and the way that we look at the number eight. Seven is the finale of six. I'll explain. I promise you, I'm not here to like keep the information to myself. I would like for you to understand it. Seven is the finale of six. So for example, the pasuk says, "Sheshes yamim tavod v'asis kol melach tacha." Right, 6 days a week you shall work. Right, uvayom hashav. Right, and on Shabbos that's l'Hashem Elokecha. So you see that the seventh day is what? It's the end. It's the end cap. It brings together all the 6 days before it. Not so when it comes to the number eight. The number eight is fundamentally more than the seven that came before it. Okay, just as an example of what this looks like, there's 6,000 years of creation. You girls know this, there's 6,000 years of creation. The Gemara says there's 2,000 years of chaos, 2,000 years of Torah, 2,000 years of Mashiach. Then there's 1,000 years of Shabbos, that's the period that we're about to start. And then there's something called Olam Haba, the next world. And that's the eighth dimension. That's what follows after the 7,000 years. But it's a whole different reality. It's not like Shabbos, which is the end cap of the week. The eighth dimension is a whole distinct reality. It's the reality of the supernatural. So the seven is always natural, right? Shabbos is within the natural world. It's only me'ein olam haba. It's only a taste of the world to come, because it's that bridge in between. But still, it's shayach to the 6 days of the week. The eighth dimension is not really shayach to the seven that come before it. It's its own beyond the natural, supernatural reality. So the question is, what does that mean? So Rav Lapiansky quotes a Rambam. Do you girls know that in the times of the prophets, there were Navi yeshivas? Do you know this? The yeshivas, the Rambam describes that there were Navi yeshivas where a person would go to work on their midos, because the only way that you could receive prophecy was through becoming a vehicle to receive the prophecy. So you went to these like Navi yeshivas, and basically they were Musar yeshivas. You went to work on yourself. So let's say a person spent all that time working on themselves. Is that a guarantee that they'll get prophecy? Listen to the words of the Rambam. This is the Rambam writes, Va'af al pi shemechavnim daitam, even though a person spent time focusing and concentrating on becoming a vehicle to receive the word of Hashem, efshir shetishra shechina alein, ve'efshir shelo tishra. It's possible they'll get prophecy. It's also possible that they won't get prophecy. Meaning, within the realm of seven, you do your work. You put in the work. You become a vehicle, right? You change yourself. But in the realm of the eighth, that's Hashem responding to you. Maybe it will happen. Maybe it won't. Okay? So when it comes to, let's say, a prophet could do all the work. Maybe he'll get prophecy. Maybe it won't. For the seven first days of the inauguration of the Mishkan, what did Klal Yisrael do? What did the Kohanim do? They worked to make the Mishkan a place where Hashem would dwell. What was the question, though, on the eighth day? The question on the eighth day is, will Hashem choose to dwell within the reality that we made for him? Okay, I'll give you an example of what this looks like in a very mundane day-to-day thing, but this is where I want you to lock in, because this was the exciting part that I wanted to get to. Okay, you ready? If I'm in a relationship with someone, I can go out and I can buy or make the most beautiful gift for another person. But what am I not in control of? Whether or not they will receive my gift. Right? So from the perspective, we'll call it of 7 and 8. What's the 7? 7 is me spending all the time and energy to make this gift, to get this gift, right? I don't want to give it away, but I was talking to a young man who's dating a young lady right now, and Baruch Hashem, the relationship is progressing. I can't say any details, just in case by some random chance she listens to this, then I don't want to give away what the gift is, right? But last night he was telling me about this thing that she mentioned, and he was like, perfect. I'm going to go out and buy that thing for her. And there's another thing that's also like an accoutrement. You know, it's like attached to that thing. I can get both of them. I can make it personalized. I can get her name written on it, right? And as they say, an unexpected gift and an unexpected time is the key to a woman's heart, right? So he's hoping, right, that this unexpected gift, unexpected time, right before Pesach, a pre-Pesach, pre-Afikoman present, and he's hoping that this will continue to advance the relationship. That's all within the realm of 7. He's putting in all this work to try to be a person who she'll want to participate in a relationship with. But what's the 8th dimension? She might not receive his gift, right? Because at the end of the day, what do we not control? We don't control the other. In any relationship, we don't control how the other person responds to us. Does that make sense? So I can only do my best. I can put myself out there. But whether or not you respond to me, that's up to you. And there's something very beautiful about seeing it this way. Because let's go back to the Navi. What is a Navi? If you wanted to really think about what is a Navi, right? So we think of a Navi as like a really good fortune teller, no? Like, isn't that what we like, think about it? Like, you go to the Navi and he's like, closes his eyes and then, you know, like, obviously the Navi is Sephardi, right? And like tells you, like, I just wanted to see how many people I would offend. Yeah? And I don't mean the Sephardim, I mean the Ashkenazim. Yeah? And the Navi looks into the future and says, this is what's going to happen to you. That's the way we think about a Navi. But is that really the right way of thinking about a Navi? That seems to be almost idolatrous, right? Like you're using the Navi as like a tool for like telling you the future. That doesn't seem to be a very good idea. Really, if you think about what a Navi is, a Navi is the ultimate in terms of being in a relationship with Hashem. This is someone who's totally dedicated themselves to being aligned with Hashem. And at the end of the day, the last bit of effort is what? I don't control whether or not Hashem will respond to me. But you could do everything you want to be appropriate for the relationship, but at the end of the day, we don't control Hashem. This is what it means, the 8th day. When Klal Yisrael was sitting there at the inauguration of the Mishkan, and now it's Yom HaShemini, what was the tension, right? What was the drama on the 8th day? The drama was, we just put in 7 days. We put in all the work to make this the home that you wanted us to build, right? We erected the Mishkan. It's beautiful. We have all the Kalim. Everything is set up. What are they waiting on the 8th day for? They're waiting to see, will the fire come down from Shemayim and consume those sacrifices? Because if it does, that's good. That means that Hashem wants to be in a relationship with us. But if not, then it's getting left at the altar, right? If not, it's the ultimate rejection. It's the ultimate you're dumped, right? I'm not interested in being in a home with you. So this was a big deal, Yom HaShemini, okay? And now, Aaron is afraid. Now let's examine this. Is Aaron allowed to be afraid if the Karban is an obligation? The answer is no. It sounds like a little bit funny, but I'll explain. If you're obligated to do something, is fear a good excuse? No. If you're obligated to do something, then even if you're afraid, what do? You overcome that fear and you get it done. That's the Aaron HaKohen that we would have expected. If he was obligated to bring this Karban, then Aaron HaKohen would have brought the Karban. But Aaron HaKohen was afraid. What would he have done? Self-regulation, right? And he would have said, okay, I'm going to compartmentalize my fear. There's, we'll use IFS language, right? There's a part of me that's afraid, but myself and the eight C's of self remains confident and clarity and all the different things, right? And I'm going to choose to engage from that place in order to bring this carbon. There's no doubt that's what Aaron HaKohen would have done. But here, there was a completely different goal. What was the goal? The goal was Aaron HaKohen's going to bring this carbon, and what's going to happen? Hashem is going to respond to the carbon by saying what? By saying yes or no. I choose to be in this relationship, or I don't choose to be in this relationship. Now, let's go back. This is deep now. You ready? Aaron HaKohen is afraid. Why is he afraid? Because he's asking himself the question, because I built the Egel HaZahav, because I'm the one that built the golden calf, if I'm the one to bring the carbon, then what might Hashem say? I don't want to be in a home with you. You understand Aaron's fear? Aaron's fear now is not Aaron is afraid so he doesn't show up to the relationship. No, no, no. Of course Aaron would have shown up. Aaron is saying, I don't know if I'm the best person to bring this carbon, because if Hashem is now going to choose, and I have no control over or not whether or not Hashem chooses, if Hashem is going to choose to participate or not to participate, to come down and take that carbon or not to take that carbon, to dwell in this home or not to dwell in this home, Aaron HaKohen is saying, am I the right person to bring them to bring the carbon? Because after all, I'm the one who made the Egel. And maybe Hashem will say, I'm not the right person to build a home with. You understand? This is now a real reasonable fear that Aaron HaKohen has. He's not just stam afraid because he made a mistake. He's asking himself the question, if I bring the carbon, is Hashem going to say yes? Will he receive our gift? You hear? Okay. Now, if somebody comes to you, so far so good, right? Now we understand Aaron's fear, but what question do we still have? We still have the question of Moshe Rabbeinu going, stop it, right? That doesn't seem to make sense.
But it does make sense.
Well, we'll see. Obviously, it makes sense on some level, but I think we're going to give a more sophisticated answer, but I want to hear your answer, yeah? Mm-hmm. But I don't want, in case you're saying the right answer and you steal my thunder, yeah, so let me go first, yeah? But I'm sure, tell me yours afterwards. Let's see if it's the same. Or maybe you'll have a better answer than me. Okay, so it goes like this. Imagine you're in a relationship with someone, but you're not so happy with them. Things in the relationship are not going so well. Chas v'shalom. And now, they come and give you a gift. Are you inclined to take it?
No.
Because the truth of the matter is that sometimes a gift is really awkward. If the relationship is not going well and somebody tries to give you a gift, it's like we're not holding there. Because what does a gift mean? A gift means that, like, I'm showing you my dedication, my love, my appreciation. But what if you don't feel loved? What if you don't feel appreciated? What if you don't feel that this person has been loyal to you? The gift becomes almost like uncomfortable. It's like, it doesn't taste good in your mouth, right? It's like grainy. It's like, ugh. It goes against where the relationship is holding. So imagine you say to this person, right? Thank you for that. Imagine if you say to this person, because I also caught myself. Imagine if you say to this person, like, you're being so selfish by not taking the gift. Like, look, I'm trying to do a nice thing for you. Why can't you just accept the gift? In some ways, doesn't that make it even worse? It makes it even more uncomfortable to take the gift. Why? Because I want to take the gift from you if there's space for me in the relationship. But if you demand or try to control how I show up to the relationship, then what don't I feel? I don't feel welcome. I don't feel safe. I don't feel like this is a place that can actually hold me. You understand? So there are people that they're trying so hard. Like, I'll say it like this, right? There are husbands that are trying to be such good husbands that they've forgotten about their wives. Does that make sense? Rav Manas Friedman had a very famous book that came out in the 80s. It was called Why Doesn't Anyone Blush Anymore? And I'm pretty sure it was like a New York Times bestseller. Some of you may have heard of it. The original title of the book was called Shut Up, I Love You. And he explained that he wanted the title of the book to be Shut Up, I Love You, because he said that's sometimes what happens in a relationship. Will you just be quiet so I can love you? People who, they appear to be the best husbands, they appear to be the best wives, but really who are they serving? They're serving themselves. I want to be the best husband, so will you shut up so I can love you? It has nothing to do with the person that they're married to. If somebody gives you a gift, and you don't want to take that gift, and they go, will you just stop it? Just take the gift. Just be appreciative for everything that I do, yeah? So then what's the problem? They're not interested in being married to you. They're interested in being a person who gives a gift. Do you hear the difference? And in fact, by trying to control you, by trying to tell you how you have to show up to the relationship, you're actually paradoxically pushed out even farther. So imagine the following. Now it's the eighth day. And Hashem is, quote unquote, obviously we don't mean this literally, deciding, am I going to live in the Mishkan? Am I going to accept Klal Yisrael's gift? Right? This is literally what Klal Yisrael is doing. They said, God, we built you a home. Imagine that your husband comes in one day, you're in an apartment, he comes in with a big smile on his face, he said, come, let's go for a ride. And you go to a house and he goes, I bought this for us. Right? Like, that's a pretty big surprise. You bought a house for us? I didn't know if I wanted that house or not. So it's a very vulnerable moment. What would our natural reaction be in that moment? As human beings, naturally, we would want to be like, come on, God, let's go. Like, do it, right? Like, just take it. Just take our gift. But if we show up that way, then naturally, what are we doing? We're actually pushing God farther away. So now let's listen to the way that the Baal Shem Tov, let's listen to the way that the Chozen Melublin, and maybe Miss Travis, read Rashi. Yeah? Let's read Rashi again. Krav el HaMizbeach. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron HaKohen, draw close to the Mizbeach. Why? Shahaya Aaron Bosh V'yarei Lageshes. Because Aaron HaKohen was embarrassed, and he was saying, I don't know if I'm the person that Hashem would want to have a relationship with. He's afraid because he says, does God really want me? So listen what Moshe says. He doesn't say stop it. He says, Lama atabosh, why are you the one that's embarrassed? Lekach nivcharta. It's specifically because you are embarrassed, specifically because you're afraid to draw close, that's why you were chosen to be the one to bring this carbon. Because you're the humble man that creates space. In other words, if let's say you have a wife and she's not feeling particularly close to the husband, and the husband comes and brings a gift, and he says, I don't know if you'll take it from me because I know that things haven't always been great with us, but I'm hopeful that you do. And he humbles himself, recognizing that he hasn't been perfect in the relationship. In a certain way, even though we're not controlling the other person, doesn't that attract the wife to want to say yes? If it was your husband, wouldn't you want to say yes to such a gift? Right? Because he's not interested in the gift. What's he interested in? You. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron HaKohen, of all the people in the entire nation that could be the person to bring the carbon that Hashem will choose to say yes to, it has to be you. Aaron HaKohen says, me? But I'm the one that brought the Egel Azav. I don't think that I'm worthy of this. Moshe Rabbeinu says, exactly. Because you have the humility to recognize that you haven't been perfect in the relationship, in a certain way, you're the most attractive one. So Krav el HaMizbeach, he's not saying to Aaron HaKohen, don't be afraid. You hear the answer? He's not saying don't be afraid. He's saying, because you're afraid, lekach nivcharta. It's for this reason that you've been chosen. Why is this so important? Why is this idea so important to us? You know, these years of seminary, they're, and I know that there's a lot of, like, you know, classes that are given over the course of the year on dating and marriage. And it could sometimes even be, as the boys told me, it could be OD, right? It's like, it could be a little bit much. Yeah, I get it. But there's a reason for it. The reason is because in these formative years, right before you enter into the Parsha of Shaduchim, you need to be able to become aware of what it looks like to participate in a relationship. And the Torah is the ultimate model for us about what it looks like to participate in a relationship. If you show up to a relationship and you're not in self and you're operating from a place of fear, but the fear is not the humble fear, the fear is not the recognition that you're imperfect, but it's a fear that you overcompensate for. So you say, because I'm afraid, because I know I'm not perfect, I have to control. You know what that does? That doesn't leave space for anybody else to participate in a relationship with you. Lots of times people go out with people and they're like, I don't know why I'm not attracting anyone, right? Remember that attraction is something that happens within us. We are naturally nuclear reactors of love and connection, but we can stop that reaction from happening by being out of self. Does that make sense? So a guy who shows up, we all know these guys, right? If a guy shows up and he's like Mr. Macho, Mr. Tough, Mr. Arrogant, like at first glance, you might go like, oh, he's like a cool guy, but then he opens up his mouth and you're like, ugh, why is that? Because there's no room for us. So the work that we have to do on ourselves is to say, who am I that I would be a person that could create attraction? You know, there's a famous story, I don't think it ever happened, but it's like one of these famous stories that's told in yeshivas, that a boy came to his Rosh Yeshiva and he said, I don't know what to do. I've literally dated 200 girls and I haven't found a girl that I can marry. And I'm so sick of dating. I don't know what to do. And the Rosh Yeshiva strokes his beard and he chuckles and he closes his eyes and he opens his eyes and he looks at the boy and he says, tell me, is there anything that all of these girls had in common? Like one common thread, the reason why it didn't work out with all of them? So the boy stops and he thinks, it's a brilliant question from his Rosh Yeshiva. So he stops and he thinks about it and he says, I don't think so, Rebbe. Like, this girl was too smart. This girl wasn't smart enough. This girl was too in town. This girl was too out of town. And he starts listing all the different things that each one had and why it didn't work out with all 200 girls. And finally, at the end, the Rosh Yeshiva smiles at him and he goes, there is one thing that all of these girls had in common. The boy goes, what? He goes, you. You're the one thing that all these girls had in common. Meaning, if you've dated 200 girls and you couldn't find somebody to marry within those 200 girls, maybe it's not the 200 girls. Maybe there's something that's happening inside of us. Most people don't realize that when it comes to dating, the work is actually internal. People spend a lot of time talking to their like rebbeim and their teachers, their mechanchot, their rakazot, their madrichot, and they go like, what should I be looking for? It's the wrong question. You know what you should be looking for. You don't need someone to tell you what you should be looking for. The question is, how should I be looking inside of myself to become someone who's a nuclear reactor of love and connection? By the way, I'm sure you've met those people, no? I'm not talking about charismatic people. I'm not talking about dynamic people. I'm talking about people that are so centered, so balanced, that naturally just people find themselves drawn to such people. Have you met such people in your life? It's amazing. Do you know that every one of us has the capacity to do that? When we show up in self, we just attract that. We're magnetic. The nature of a human being is that we're designed to connect to another human being. So this lesson right here in this parsha is such a huge lesson. What's the number one feature of being in a relationship? The number one thing. If you have this, you have everything. What's the number one thing that will invite someone into your life?
Vulnerability.
Vulnerability is right. That's the birthplace of connection. But I think the answer we're hearing tonight is humility. The ability to create space for another. You don't need to be perfect, but you do need to have a certain sense of busha. Busha doesn't mean to be ashamed. It doesn't mean shame like I'm unworthy of love and connection. It means the ability to recognize that I can pull back and create space for another and give them the choice of whether or not they want to participate in a relationship with me. And if they don't, that's sad, but I'll be okay. And if they do, that's wonderful. I would love to participate in a relationship with them. Exactly why Aaron HaKohen was afraid is exactly what made Aaron HaKohen the ultimate vehicle for the Yom HaShmini. Yom HaShmini is up to Hashem. It's like the Navi. The Navi works on himself for all those years. He goes to Navi school. And what's he working on the entire time? He's working on his ego. And at the end of the day, he stands ready to receive Hashem's prophecy. Will he receive it? Don't know. Maybe Hashem will choose him. Maybe he won't. But if the Navi, after all those years of Navi training, of all those years of those 7 days of work, he gets angry and he goes, how come God never gives me Nevuah? Hagufa. It's because you had the arrogance to demand it, it drives Hashem away. Your ego is not yet rectified. This is the work for all of us. The work for all of us, every person naturally has a level of ego to us. Every single person naturally has a question like, why should I not put myself at the forefront? Because that's what people do in order to survive, right? But we have to work on our humility. We have to step aside from our animal soul that wants to just survive, elevate our godly soul, which is naturally selfless, and Be'ez Hashem will invite healthy people into participating in a healthy relationship with us. I think this is our last class for Pesach, so I just want to wish you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, and do not forget, if you're going home for Pesach, you have the opportunity to be mechabed your parents. Grab every single moment. You've been in Eretz Yisrael for a number of months already. Take the time to be mechabed your parents.